This is The Program with Andrew Walker and Satyar Shah on the official home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650.
Hands off, Jimmy! Don't touch Jimmy!
Social distancing in style from their homes and broadcasting live. Here's Andrew and Sat.
Hey, welcome to the show, 401. Sorry, I was sending something in the group text that needed to be sent. Andrew Walker, Satyar Shah, for the first time in 5 years. It definitely felt like it against Minnesota, but officially, for the first time in 5 years, It is a Canucks playoff game day. We're excited for the next bajillion hours that we're going to be on the air. Let's get to it. 650-650 is the text line, and the phone lines open right away. 604-280-0650. Canucks Blues game one tonight, 7:30 puck drop.
Let's get after it. And also, if you're listening outside of this market and you want to call in toll free, 1-888-275-0650. How jacked up are you for the Vancouver Canucks' official first round of the playoffs, best of seven series against the defending Stanley Cup champion St. Louis Blues? And the question I have, number one, because this is always the first question you ask when the playoffs really begin: how much do you believe? What do you believe your team is able to accomplish in this postseason? Because if you beat the Blues, then all of a sudden, in this new world we live in the bubble, where the playing field is as level as it has ever been in hockey, what happens if the Canucks are able to find a way to get through the Blues? That's why there is lots of excitement, I think, within this fan base, Walks, because as much as people do agree the Blues are favored, they are beatable. This is not an opponent we look at and say, you know what, Canucks got no chance tonight or in this series.
It's one of those things. I mention this all the time on the show, and this goes for a non-pandemic weird August bubble year. It doesn't matter if you're a Stanley Cup favorite or if you're a team that squeaked into the playoffs. There's a certain point in the postseason, and hey, it's round one, game one. We have a bit more of a run feeling because they beat Minnesota, but there is a certain point in the NHL playoffs where I do feel like everybody comes to the middle and everybody kind of has an equal chance to win. Like, for instance, if the Canucks manage to pull off the upset of the St. Louis Blues, and we'll call it an upset, if they manage to pull that off and they're in the next round facing whomever, it means that they're playing really well. It means they had big goals. It means that Jacob Markstrom played well. It means that they're healthy. It means that their belief internally is even higher than it is right now, and it's already pretty high after beating Minnesota. Right? So once you get to that point, like, there's nobody, doesn't mean you will beat them, but you get to that point, there's nobody that you can't beat. And the same goes for anybody else, the Calgary Flames, the Columbus Blue Jackets. Everybody starts to play the same way. You're in routine. You know you're playing every second day. You know every second day you're laying it all on the line. The toughest part to get through is this early part and the play-in series. We saw Pittsburgh fall. We saw Edmonton fall. We've seen some big teams already lose game one or be pushed to the brink of five overtimes. You know, Boston went to double overtime today to beat Carolina. So, yeah, anything can happen, I think, once you get to a certain point.
And you might already be here in that point, considering what is happening right now. And this matchup is a lot different than, hey, had the Blues been the number two seed and the Canucks got in at number seven, the seven seed, for instance, and they had kind of been scuffling to get in, we might have a different perception of how this matchup might go. But considering how the Canucks looked against the Minnesota Wild, and considering that some of these players now look a bit different, they're healthier, and we talk about the veterans, how early in the season, they're always usually reliable and good. Now it's kind of like a fresh new season heading to the postseason, which should help these veteran Canucks. But more than anything, Walks, we're already seeing improvement from these young guys. So when you're evaluating this Canucks team we're seeing today, August 12, 2020, it's a lot different from the team we saw on March 10, just 5 months ago.
650-650 is the text line. We got Jim Benning coming up at 4:30. And get your questions in, whether it's on the text line or via Twitter, because from 5 to 5:30, before we get to the pregame show with Jovo and Yannick Hansen, we're going to do a half-an-hour edition of the Canucks playoff mailbag, everything you think or want to know about this series. And Sat and I will answer those for you. So get your questions in or your takes right now, 650, 650. Let's go to the phone line, 604-280-0650. Oh, we did have James and Stevenson. We'll try to reconnect with them in a couple of minutes. Go ahead and call back. But get in line if you want to jump on the show before the pregame show.
Yeah, and fans are fired up, man. Jordan from Saskatoon says, Canucks effing playoff game day. Feels so good to say that. It's going to be a tough series, but our boys, like Bieksa said, have skill and the will. We are on our way. Can't wait for the game. Tonight, we start our own path to the Stanley Cup. Effing fired up, boys. Let's go. That is Jordan from Saskatoon. Absolutely jazzed for this Canucks-Blues game one tonight.
And so just to remind you how it's going tonight, puck drop is 7:30 right here on your home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650. The pregame show gets going with us, Walker, Sat, at 5:30. We'll be joined by Ed Jovanovski. We'll be joined by Yannick Hansen, and we'll be sticking around. We'll watch the game here in studio and have intermissions for you. And then the unlimited postgame show, good or bad, win or lose, takes off right after the game, and we got our coffee, we got our Red Bull, Sat and I. Throughout this playoff run, we'll stay as late as we need to. You keep calling, you keep texting, you want to talk Canucks hockey, we'll stay all night if we have to. Friday night against Minnesota was so much fun.
Oh,
we had
man.
Calls till 3 in the morning, and so it's up to you. You want to keep us here, we will stay. You won't get that anywhere else in the city, that's a promise. So, okay, let's take a look at this matchup. The St. Louis Blues are Stanley Cup champs for a reason. What are you confident in, Sat, heading in? And what are you questioning or what does worry you about the Blues?
The biggest thing I worry about, Walks, is actually special teams. What I saw from the Canucks at even strength with how they defended and got in on the forecheck. I mean, hey, the Blues still trend towards being the better team at even strength. They're going to carry possession and stuff. But overall, the Canucks showed enough that, hey, I'm positive about what they did. The Wild power play isn't exactly one of the deadliest power plays in the league. It's solid, right? Canucks did a pretty good job against the Wild. The Blues power play, though, is almost every bit as good as the Canucks power play. And their PK throughout the year has had some moments. Now, Markstrom's been great on the PK. Mott's been fantastic. And Beagle wins draws. But they've been very inconsistent. You saw at times against Minnesota, they killed off like 7 in a row, 13 in a row. They did a really good job. But at times, it has cratered on them, especially when they're down an extra, when the other team brings the extra attacker on the ice. You saw a couple times things fell apart for the Canucks. Honestly, my biggest question in this series, it was even strength against the Wild. This one is special teams for me. How do you slow down the St. Louis Blues power play? Because if you do, that might be the key to the series.
Mm-hmm. They won't be able, like certain things you got away with against Minnesota, you just won't be able to get away with against St. Louis, clearly. And that includes some shaky goals from Jacob Markstrom, right? Jacob Markstrom was, overall, in the series against Minnesota, he was okay. He wasn't bad, but he wasn't great. Like, he wasn't the Jacob Markstrom that we're used to seeing. You know, as referenced by Friedman in 31 Thoughts yesterday, he gave up two goals in this series that he hadn't given up all season. So Jacob Markstrom has to be a little better, obviously, for the Canucks to knock off the Blues. He's going to have to take a couple of games himself, you would think. They're not going to be able to take as many penalties as they did against Minnesota. And, hey, Tyler Myers is a big part of that equation. 9 minors in a series obviously is way too many because St. Louis will burn you. And I do wonder, because St. Louis is – Minnesota has some heavy players. St. Louis is legit heavy.
They are. I mean,
they're a heavy forechecking team.
Are.
And if I'm the Blues – I watched that series of the Canucks against Minnesota, and I saw that their whole key to this team, or a huge key anyway, is Quinn Hughes. Right? And Quinn Hughes got better and better as the series went on, and when the series was at its most crucial moment, Quinn Hughes took over Game 4. We all watched that. If I'm the Blues, my number one priority is make life miserable for Quinn Hughes, who is a 20-year-old rookie, sub-6-foot, non-physical defenseman. That's my number one priority. Now, are they going to be able to do it? I don't know. Maybe Quinn Hughes is that escapable. But if I'm St. Louis, that's my number one priority.
That's going to be their priority, 100%. The question, what you mentioned, is going to be the biggest key for them. Can they square him up enough times to inflict that damage on him? Because he is so elusive when he has the puck, even in his own zone along the boards. One of the things, Walks, that really impressed me about Quinn, he won a lot of puck battles, man, against the Minnesota Wild. And it's not like they don't have forwards that aren't big. I mean, he won battles against guys like Greenway that came in on the forecheck. He was able to spin off checks, find a way to dig pucks out, and transition the puck the other way. So I've been really impressed with how Quinn Hughes has handled it so far. Next level challenge against the Blues, absolutely, I agree with you. But honestly, man, I think the Blues might be the team that could be a bit more surprised about how physical this series is. The Canucks played physical, and so did the Wild in that first round series. And I'll say this too. Remember during the scrimmages, and we talked so much, you know, people that were at training camp, people that were at all the scrimmages, I was there a couple of times. What do we keep saying? Lots of intensity. The Canucks are playing hard. I mean, mm-hmm. These scrimmages are intense. They're playing hard, and they're doing scrimmages at 7:30 at night. Remember that? Like, they had the 7:30 starts,
yep.
You know, essentially mimicking a real game scenario, and they've looked ready this entire postseason. I don't think the Canucks are going to get into this series and be surprised by the level of physicality the Blues do. If anything, I think the Blues might be surprised at how engaged this Canucks team is, because they're not going to come into this game, I don't think, feeling like they have an advantage physically over the Blues. Like, I really think that this series is going to start off and the Canucks will be ready to play right away.
Now, the Blues are objectively a better team than, say, the Dallas Stars.
Yeah.
But the Canucks, for whatever reason, played better against the Blues this year. Honestly, the last 2 years, the Vancouver Canucks in the Elias Pettersson era have played the St. Louis Blues straight up, right? They've gone to overtime. They lost here. They went to a shootout. They won in St. Louis. They played the Blues even up. Elias Pettersson and those guys have had a lot of success against the St. Louis Blues. Neither of these teams' power plays have been great against each other, or the penalty kills have been good. Every time these two teams have played, it's been a tight playoff-like affair. So I don't think the Canucks are intimidated going up against
no.
the big bad, you know, Blues who won the Stanley Cup.
Listen,
certainly prefer them to Vegas.
Well, I mean, the Blues might very well win this series, obviously, but I don't think the Canucks are going to get into this series being intimidated or afraid or being surprised at how physical this is. I heard a few of the Blues players kind of say, I mean, the Canucks have to be ready for us. You know, they have to understand you got to be ready because we play physical all the time. And it's kind of like, well, if you guys watch them play against the Minnesota Wild, they're ready to play physically. My question with the Blues more than anything is, how willing are they to fight tooth and nail if they lose the first game and fall back a little bit? The biggest question is, how much motivation do you have? And it's not even about living in the bubble. It's just the simple human question of, in this situation right now, if you get down, if you've had success in the past, at what moment do you get in your own head a bit too much? Because, man, we saw a number of teams, Walks, in that first play-in round when they fell down 2-1. You could see it in players' faces, right? Like, it's like, I just want to go home. You saw it in Connor McDavid's face to some degree. You saw it in some of the other players on the ice. When things started going against them, not many teams mounted comebacks. That's why I give the Columbus Blue Jackets credit. They came back from a 3-0 deficit. Toronto actually pushed the pace to come back in Game 4. They lost Game 5. But we've seen too many times already where a team falls behind and has a hard time conjuring up that intensity to come back.
Yeah, and I don't know if it's a – I don't think it's a quit factor, but you're right. The Vancouver Canucks actually were the only team in this play-in round to lose Game 1 and actually come back to win the series. And I think it's just a level of maybe discomfort in the sense of – like, let's say even the Oilers, okay? They got down 2-1. And a lot of people are like, okay, they're still McDavid, they're still Dreisaitl, they'll find their groove, they'll come back in this series, and you know, the cream eventually rises to the top. But it's the start of a new season. Like, you don't have time to gradually find your form or rediscover your game. There was no time. If you didn't have your game in Game 2, like, you probably weren't going to find it in Game 3.
No.
And that was kind of the theme that we saw.
See, the proverbial switch. Can you just flip it whenever you want? I mean,
right.
We've been around this game long enough that it doesn't exist. You can't just flip it. Only select teams can figure that out. Well, are the Blues that team? They could very well be, right? But it's not like you just flip a switch right away. Like, it takes time to get into it. Even you saw a number of teams in that first game they played, even if they won, they weren't quite there, and then they kind of figured it out. That switch kind of has to happen organically. Do they have it right away?
Well, I think you can flip the switch if you're a really good team and you have veteran savvy and everything.
Right.
But you flip the switch after like 82 games of the regular season and hey, the last 2 weeks weren't that intense and the playoffs start and you get in the mode. But like, again, this is like game number 5 of the season for the Vancouver Canucks. This is game 1 of the season for the St. Louis Blues. They had a few preseason games. So you can flip the switch if you are in the middle of your year, but you can't flip it like when the year starts.
And that's kind of where you're at. Like, it's a playoff series. It's a best of 7, but how do you bring it? And that's why, honestly, one of the things we've talked about so much through the pandemic has been, how do you adapt to your environment? Those who are going to find the best way to get through this will be the people that find a way to adapt themselves to this environment. It's the same thing for these guys playing in this bubble. This is something Travis talked about too with these guys. How do you adapt? And the team that wins the Stanley Cup, and we've heard this from a number of different players, man. We talked to Rhett Warner about this. We've talked to Ed Jovanovski about this. We've talked to other former players who have said, this year is probably the year where the team that clicks and comes together and has that, you know, us against the world mentality and figures it out the first might be the team that has the advantage. Is that the Canucks? Who knows? But the mysticism that we talk about oftentimes is usually not a thing over 82 games, but it could come into play in this playoff setting.
And just a word of caution, or I guess, or a reminder. And I love the passion. And we were up late for game 4. Obviously, we were up late for game 1, to be quite honest, because people were so, I don't know, jaded and so disappointed that the Canucks got shut out in their first playoff-style game in 5 years. It was tough to take. But, like, there was a lot of crazy over-the-top reaction after game number 1. And I think we can all safely say a lot of that was a little premature. It was one game. Granted, it was a best of 5, but it was one game. Just a word of caution, because I don't know how this game's going to go tonight. All right, like hopefully the Canucks come out and they surprise the Blues. They get a great start, they get to Binnington, who knows? And then all of a sudden the seed of doubt is in St. Louis's mind this whole series. But the Blues are a really good team. Vancouver might lose game 1 tonight. It'd be great to win, but tonight is about finding your footing in the series and equating yourself well as an underdog. Like for instance, maybe a bad example because 5 overtimes is that takes a lot out of you. That's a demoralizing loss. But like Columbus showed, it's still a race to 4. Columbus showed they're right there again with Tampa. Right now Tampa's like, oh boy, like we got a battle on our hands. You know, Carolina, I know they wanted to win today. Mm-hmm. Rob Brind'Amour, you know, does feel they got jobbed and they might've. But Carolina, obviously, they're right there with Boston. That's anybody's series, and we know it. Today and tonight, I mean, is about it's equating yourself well in game 1. A win would be great, but the Canucks do not have to win tonight in order to win the series. So keep perspective.
Can you hang tonight? You need to prove that you can hang in this series. That's kind of the way you have to make a statement tonight. And also, when it comes to playoff hockey walks, do you have the stomach for it? Right? Because,
sure.
Dude, it is up and down, emotional highs and devastating lows if you lose a heartbreaking game. Like, these are the emotions you go through. You reference back game 1 against Minnesota. How did most fans feel? A lot of fans feel. Dejection. Because it hurt. You were so jacked up, jazzed up. 4.5 months. Man,
yep,
we got a meaningful hockey game. They get shut out. You were so frustrated watching that game as a Canucks fan, and it brought back all those, you know, harsh emotions again and ghosts of playoff pass as well, where you feel like your team might kind of scuff his feet here and not get through. And they figured it out. They won 3 straight games. It looked pretty good. But do you have the stomach for playoff hockey? Because you're going to have some devastating lows.
And we've only had to suffer through 11 seconds of overtime,
yeah.
Which, you know, thank God. Joey in Richmond, Texan, 650-650, makes a great point. And I do feel this way, too. He says, man, St. Louis looked like room temperature hot dog water during the round robin really going to come down to if St. Louis can hit the ground running and go from 0 to 100 real quick. If they can't pick it up within the first couple of games, the Canucks could find themselves up 2-0 very quickly. They're the champs, so I'm not counting them out, but it's going to be about their pace for me, and if they can pick it up ASAP. I totally agree. I do think that there is a chance early in this series for the Canucks to ride their momentum. Now, that doesn't last very long. Mm-mm. That disappears pretty quick.
It could disappear after the first period.
Yeah, totally.
So, but I do agree with Joey and Richmond. Sometimes for teams that haven't yet got to that level of intensity, it takes a game or two, and do you catch up with it fast enough? And here's the thing, like, none of us here are saying that this gives the Canucks the advantage and they will win the series. The question with the Blues is, if they're not at 100%, how close to 100% do they need to beat the Canucks? Mm-hmm. Can they win at 90%? Can they win at 95%? I think that's going to be the question.
So here's a question as well. And by the way, 650-650 is the text line, and give us a tweet as well if you find it, at Andrew Walker 650 or at Satyar Shah. The Canucks playoff mailbag is coming up from 5 to 5:30. I think there are very few goalies in the league, or very few instances where you can say, are we afraid of getting, you know, hashicked in this series, right? What Yaroslav Halak did to the Washington Capitals back in the day, what... you know, a goalie stealing a series. I think that Jacob Markstrom has that ability. Like, if I'm saying, I think he's one of the few guys in the league that St. Louis can say, boy, I hope we don't get Markstromed. So I'll flip it on its ear. How afraid of you are you of Jordan Binnington?
I respect Jordan Binnington. He's shown he can win a Stanley Cup. He's shown he can put a series on his back. He's shown he can do that. However, Jordan Binnington hasn't been at his best this season. He just hasn't been. And goaltending overall for the Blues has been problematic. On paper, the Canucks have the advantage here. But I do think you got to be really careful counting out Binnington and thinking he doesn't have another level. If there's a player on the Blues, walks, that will be motivated in this series, unlike his other teammates, it might be Jordan Binnington. That guy is not over losing the Calder to Pettersson. He's not. Whether you think that's good or bad, or it's petty, and is he going to get in his own head and be too worried about Petey? I don't think Pettersson views Binnington the same way Binnington views Pettersson. Is that going to be enough to give Binnington that desire to find his best game? Because Binnington has always been a guy, walks, and this is what a lot of guys have talked about knowing him throughout the years, and he took a long time to get to the National Hockey League at this level,
sure,
too.
He sure did.
That he used a lot of things for motivation, whether there were personal things with family members or friends that had happened or criticism that's happened or doubt that's happened in the past. He's internalized a lot of things over the years to get to his level. And Pettersson is a motivating factor for him. The question for a goalie, though, is if you focus so much on one individual on the other team, are you losing sight of what you need to worry about overall?
Right. Is that, in a sense, kind of what got Luongo in 2011?
Precisely. So if you're looking at Binnington, he's going to be motivated. The question is he going to get into his own head so much because he wants to beat Pettersson so bad and finally get the payback from losing to Calder? Because no matter what he says, and I know this, having talked to a lot of people and seen some things and heard some things, oh, it matters.
Yeah. And maybe this is me buying too much into pedigree. Because, listen, who doesn't love a good underdog story and all that? But Jordan Binnington, and full respect, man, Jordan Binnington, here's my question. Did Jordan Binnington have this amazing year-and-a-half run, or is he just a star goaltender and will be for a lot of years? Jordan Binnington was not a high draft pick. Jordan Binnington was not really wanted by the NHL team. He bounced around and then bounced around at the lower levels. Was not even playing for, we all know the story, was not even playing for his own team's farm affiliate. Bunch of guys get injured. He comes in and rewrites the history books as, you know, he has a great second half, unbelievable, and then goes in a playoff run. And this year, he's been a pretty good number one starter. I don't want to crap on the story, because it's an amazing story. Good for him. He's played great. But we've seen a lot of goalies who have had a really good run for a year or a year and a half or 2 years. I just mentioned, you know, Yaroslav Halak was one of them, right? They were debating trading Carey Price because they had Yaroslav Halak for a solid year. And then he turned into be a, you know, decent NHL backup. I'm not, and who knows? I'm not saying it falls off the table this series, but I'm not entrenched in this belief that Jordan Binnington is a year in and year out Vezina guy.
Well, we don't
I'm taking Jacob Markstrom on my team ahead of Jordan Binnington.
Right now, and especially with how he played this season, too. I mean, look at how the way Markstrom played. Jake Allen was actually the better goalie, just numbers-wise, this season for the Blues. And I've heard some stuff from people around the Blues that, hey, they believe Binnington will start, but it's not a foregone conclusion that Binnington starts. Like, if he's not up to snuff, they might go to Jake Allen a lot quicker than people think.
Right. Everyone and their dog thought that, you know, Merz Likens was going to, you know, play, be the guy for Columbus. And they went for him to Korpisalo to, you know, back to Merz Likens. And then Korpisalo at 85 saves last night. Jim Benning is coming up after 4:30. Do want to remind you, today is Tim Hortons Camp Day. It's the largest annual fundraiser for the Tim Hortons Foundation Camps. 100% of their hot coffee and iced coffee sales today go towards the Tim Hortons Foundation Camps, who send local youth from disadvantaged circumstances to one of seven camps across North America. So keep that in mind. If you're buying a coffee today, make a swing by a Tim Hortons, because it is the annual Tim Hortons Camp Day. The pregame to the pregame continues here on the program. Andrew Walker, Satyar Shah. We will come back with a visit with Canucks GM Jim Benning next, Sportsnet 650.
To the program with Andrew Walker and Satyar Shah.
4:33, the program continues. We are an hour away from the pregame show. Andrew Walker and Satyar Shah, your home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650. Pregame show will be including Ed Jovanovski and Yannick Hansen, former Canucks. They will join us. We'll get you set. Game one, round one, tonight, 7:30 puck drop against the St. Louis Blues. Also from 5 to 5:30, so the last half an hour before the pregame show, get your questions and your takes in 650-650 on Twitter, or the phone line is 604-280-0650. It will be a half an hour edition of the Canucks playoff mailbag.
And a lot of great submissions already to our text inbox. Some questions, we'll get to those coming up in a second. But also some comments, like Duncan saying, if the Canucks don't bring the Blues back to earth, the Flames will rather see a Canucks-Flames series this year. So, yeah, I mean, if things align, you could see something really, really interesting. Todd Stewart says, Canucks, elite first-line center, check. Great two-way second-line center, check. Great goalie, check. Elite offensive defenseman, check. Great face-off team, check. Elite wingers, JT Miller and Brock Besser, check. So excited. Go, Canucks, go. Todd Stewart to our text inbox.
They're on the ice for warm-up right now between the Flyers and the Montreal Canadiens. So that game starts tonight. We'll keep you updated there. The Islanders, they doubled up the Caps 4-2 earlier this afternoon. And Arizona-Colorado, give credit to Darcy Kemper tonight. He's really handling the Avalanche. It's scoreless with 16 minutes to go in the third period. So we'll keep you updated on all those games. But first, he is the general manager of the Vancouver Canucks. He's getting ready. I'm sure he's as nervous as you are out there for game one of the playoffs against the St. Louis Blues. And Jim Benning joins us now on Sportsnet 650. Thanks for joining us, Jim. We appreciate it. If you're anything like us, I guess, how different do you feel emotionally, and especially the last couple of weeks, making the playoffs for the first time in 5 years?
It's been a tough past few seasons, like, you know, rebuilding the team and not being part of the playoffs. It hasn't been easy, but, you know, I'm excited for our group. You know, I thought, you know, we came in, you know, because we had to do that quarantine. So our guys came in early and they skated, and we had a good training camp, and Travis and his coaching staff have done an excellent job, you know, with our players. And our players, I got to give them credit. They, you know, they've worked hard all through camp. They were excited to play that series against Minnesota, and they came out and worked hard, and we played hard. We stuck with it, and we're able to win the series. So, you know, I think we're happy that we won the series. Our goal at the start of the year was to make the playoffs, but we're not satisfied because, you know, now we got a big test and playing St. Louis in this first playoff series.
Well, I'm glad you brought that up about not being satisfied, Jim, because some of the things that, you know, I keep hearing, you know, as well as anybody, being in Edmonton, being around your team, they've really come together. We've heard JT Miller talk about that as well, and Travis has mentioned it. Sometimes you really need something to rally around, and when you get past that first challenge, and especially the way the guys came back in that game four, being down three different times, and they still were able to come back from the deficits and win in overtime, that there is that belief now that we can do more than just beat the Wild. Like, there is that belief with the guys all of a sudden.
Yeah, well, they, you know, you even watch them at practice, and, you know, they're continuing to work hard, but it seems like they're having fun as a group, and they're working hard for one another, and they want, you can tell as a group, they want success. So, you know, from a team-building standpoint, in my perspective, that's good to see.
How rewarding is it for you, Jim, or you, at the very least interesting? You have a lot of, you know, veteran guys on this roster that you've really believed in signing or trading for at various times. And the time to shine for some of these guys is really this, I don't say this time of year because it's August, but this part of the season. And we haven't been able to see that. But now we're seeing, you know, the Beagles and the Sutters and the Myers, you know, play in the types of games that are really the reason you acquired them.
Yeah. Well, you know, we've had a plan, you know, since I've come in here, we've had a plan, and our plan was, is we wanted to draft skilled players, and we wanted to, you know, make sure that our core group of players going forward is going to be players that we draft and that they were going to be skilled. And so that was our plan from an amateur standpoint. But the other part to that, too, is signing some veteran players to help these kids develop properly during the regular season. And then if we were to make the playoffs, you know, that's where their experience is going to show up. And I think we've seen that, like, you know, with some of our older players have killed penalties, and, you know, and they've had experience in doing that before. Even Louis Erickson, I thought this first series was excellent in his defensive play, and, you know, he's been really good with Bo and Pearson. So, you know, that was the plan all along. And I'm happy that, you know, we were able to play in this play down round and now compete in the playoffs. So it's excellent for our young players to get that experience. Like, we can talk all we want about, you know, what it's like to play in the playoffs, but for our young guys to, you know, to actually do it for the first time for themselves, and they see the intensity and the focus, I think it's just going to make them better players going forward.
Well, you mentioned that, Jim, you know, having that success again, making the playoffs. And I know you talked to Ian in the articles up on sportsnet.ca, and you told him, yeah, it did take a bit longer than you had hoped to get back into the playoffs. And obviously, in any position, whether you are a coach, GM, or a player, you're always kind of learning and adjusting your plan and working through things and discovering new things. So when you kind of look at your tenure and when you began, and, you know, there's a lot of talk about getting tougher as a team, getting meat and potatoes and stuff. And of course, you know, through the draft, there's been skilled players drafted throughout those years, but from a managerial perspective and putting this team together and how you had envisioned it would go early on and where you are today, like, how much have you learned yourself throughout that entire process about how unpredictable it is to be in a position like this running a national hockey team and trying to retool it?
Yeah, well, it's I never once thought it was going to be easy. You know, when you take these jobs over, you know, and they had such a good run of success before I took the job, and, you know, winning President's Trophies and, you know, going a long ways in the playoffs, that, and, you know, I was part of that in Boston, as you trade draft picks to add that one more piece because you think that last piece is the piece to the puzzle to winning. And, you know, so you're not really focused on, you know, rebuilding, you're just trying to win now. So I get all that part of it. But, you know, and then when I took the job, you know, we had to start like from scratch, drafting well. We had a group of players that have had a lot of success that, you know, a lot of them had no trade contracts that we couldn't move. And, And, you know, and then it freed up cap space and allowed us to, you know, sign some free agents, sign Tyler Myers, make that JT Miller trade to help our group move forward. So I think it's a combination of, you know, that we've drafted well. We've signed some guys, some older players through free agency to help with the development of our younger players. And then I got to give credit to the players that have stuck it out with us. You know, from when I was here, when I first started, Jacob Markstrom's been excellent for us all year. Chris Taniff has been huge in the development of Quinn Hughes and some of our other younger players, and Alex Adler. And, you know, it's tough when you're not winning to be a veteran player and playing in the league and not being in the playoffs. But, you know, those guys have, you know, continued to work hard, and they deserve a lot of credit for, you know, the development of our young players.
Well, and Jim, you kind of mentioned, especially early on, you guys really wanted to add some veterans and guys that show the young guys how to have success if you get to the playoffs. And, you know, it took a while to get back here. Now you're here. But now when these young guys get that experience, and when it comes to team building beyond this season to get back in the playoffs, because now the expectation is every year you're a playoff team with this young, exciting group of players. How much does the focus kind of shift when you're building a team towards, yeah, you want to spend money and add help, support guys that help out and bring leadership, but you're going to have to spend a lot more money on your younger guys. So when it comes to how you're trying to budget for your roster and who you want to pay money for, do you get to a spot now where you almost can't afford to go after too many of those guys that offer those intangibles because you got to take care of your young guys that are going to get paid a lot?
Yeah, and I think we've been here long enough now to draft and develop our own players that are ready to play. Like Zach McEwen is a guy that, you know, our people in Utica have done a real good job developing, and he's ready to step in and play that role for us. So I think we've been here long enough now where we got some good players in the system that have been through Utica. You know, Ole Ulevi has come a long ways in the last couple of years. Jalen Chatfield, it looks like he's ready to play. So, you know, we've been here long enough now where we've, you know, from the time you draft them to you develop them, you know, sometimes it takes 3, 4, 5 years. And, you know, that's kind of, you know, how long we've been here. So we've been able to build up our prospect pool. And so we're not going to be looking to free agency anymore. We're going to try to sign, you know, some of the players that we have now. And we got, you know, young players coming through our system that we're going to play going forward that we think can help us win.
Jim Benning is our guest on a Canucks playoff game day. Andrew Walker, Sethi, our Shaw Sportsnet 650. JT Miller, Jim, now the trade is finally complete, I guess, with the lottery over and you win the series against Minnesota. This was a deal that you made, and it didn't come without its element of risk. And I'm sure you map out, okay, here's the best-case scenario for us and JT Miller, and here's the worst-case scenario. And it ends up being really the best case scenario for you guys, doesn't it?
That's what we were hoping for when we made the deal, is that, you know, that we were going to be a playoff team, or he was going to help out with the development along. And you know, I guess the thing that we didn't know is the impact that he was going to have on our group, because he's, you know, been on good teams before that have, you know, gone a long ways in the playoffs. And he's just right at that age where he's come in here, and like a lot of our players look up to him, and he's been an excellent role model for, you know, the Bo Horvats, the Jake Virtanens, you know, Petey, Quinn, Brock, like, and he's helped these guys get better, you know, when he's, you know, he's the type of guy where he's like an old school player, and when a player's not playing good, he'll be the first one to go and tap him on the shin pads, and, you know, to get him going again and to get his confidence up. And he's also the guy that if a guy gets too big for his britches, that, you know, he makes sure that, you know, he lets him know that, hey, you know, we still got work to do here, and you know, let's not get you know, bigger than the team and stuff. So, and that, I guess his leadership is something that, you know, that I didn't know about till he showed up here, but he's been so good for a whole team and our organization.
And Jim, I mean, the other player you guys added, a big trade you guys made right ahead of the deadline, was getting Tyler Toffoli. And man, was he on fire towards the end of the season before everything got shut down. And we only saw him in that one game against the Minnesota Wild. Do you have any update as to whether we should expect to see Toffoli against the Blues in this series at all?
Well, I'd love to share that with you guys, but like I've said before, it's the standard line is not fit to play. He's still with the team and he's rehabbing, but we don't know yet when he'll be back.
On Ylevi, because you did mention him before, how encouraged have you been with where he got playing that one game in game four? Tough situation. It was less than 7 minutes, but he still showed up, didn't make mistakes, and at times actually helped keep the pressure in the offensive zone, and he made some good plays. But how much more encouraged are you today compared to maybe where you were a year ago, considering everything he's gone through injury-wise?
Yeah, well, you know, like I never worried about him as a player because, you know, we drafted him because he was a high hockey sense guy. You know, he has patience with the puck. He's got his head up. He can make the play up ice. You know, that part of it I didn't worry about. The part that was a little worrisome the last couple of years was all the injuries he's had. But he's been healthy now. He's had a real good training camp for us. Like I thought, you know, our training camp before we came to Edmonton, like he really opened a lot of eyes in our own organization about the type of player that, you know, everybody thinks he can become. And so that was a high pressure situation for him the other night, you know, with fans not been able to go. You know, we told him, like Travis told him that morning, that he was going to play, and he went in. And, you know, I know he didn't play a lot of minutes, but the minutes he did play, I thought he was smart. He moved the puck. So, you know, I'm excited. I'm really excited for him because it's been a tough couple years for him. And it's nice to see that, you know, he's been healthy. And I think, you know, going forward, we're just going to get to see the best of Ole Levy.
One more on the injury front, Jim, it's a guy that we know isn't going to be back in this playoff run, and that's Michael Ferland. There is, you know, the contractual issues and everything like that, but I guess what are your feelings on everything Mike's been through? And he comes back and he fights in game one and tries to be a warrior for this team for sure. But what type of conversations does everybody need to have going forward?
Well, that, you know, I feel bad about that whole situation because he, through training camp, he came back and he felt really good and he was flying out there. You know, we've seen the Michael Ferland that we signed, like he was scoring in the scrimmages. He was getting in on the forecheck and recovering pucks. And for, you know, a big body guy, he can make good plays with the puck, make good passes. So, you know, he felt like 100%. And then, you know, he came in, played, had a setback. So, you know, we're going to continue to work with him and, you know, hopefully, you know, he gets better again and he can, you know, continue his career and continue playing for us, because when he does play and he is healthy, he's a unique player because he's a guy that, you know, can add physicality to your group, but he can also play with good players and make good play to hope for the best for him.
You mentioned Ole Levy, Jim, and maybe he's a guy that does change the equation coming up whenever next season starts. But I wonder, going forward and in this series specifically, where your evaluation lies. Like, you do have some decisions to make on players. We all know that. But in watching big boy hockey against the St. Louis Blues, how much stock do you put into a series like this in the sense of, all right, here's where we want to be. This is the type of game we need to play if we want to win anything going forward. Here's who can help us, and here's who can't.
Yeah, well, that's the part of, you know, a general manager's job. You're always trying to figure out the players that you think you can win a championship with, and you want to keep those players. And the players that, you know, don't show up in critical times in a series and stuff are, you know, maybe players that, you know, if you can, you want to replace. So, you know, that part of a general manager's job never ends. And, you know, that'll continue in this series. We know St. Louis is a veteran team. You know, they won the Stanley Cup last year. We know they're going to play a certain style of hockey and be patient. So it's going to be a good test for us because, you know, we're going to have to be patient with them. And St. Louis is comfortable playing, you know, 0-0, 1-0 when the score is close. They're comfortable playing in those style games. And, you know, I think we've worked hard through training camp to try to buckle down defensively. And, you know, we got to see where we're at if, you know, we're going to be comfortable playing tight, checking, close games.
He is Jim Benning, the general manager of the Canucks. Hey, we're fired up for you, Jim, and for the market, obviously. We look forward to game one. Try to enjoy it.
Yeah, thanks for having me, guys.
Jim Benning is the GM of the Canucks, and it is playoff game day for the first time in 5 years. Andrew Walker, Satyar Shah, half an hour away from the start of the official Land Rover pregame show presented by Image.ca, and things will get real as the Canucks are the last first-round series to get underway. Montreal and Philly just getting going in a few minutes from now.
Yeah, absolutely. So we look forward to breaking down the game a bit more, getting to the Canucks mailbag coming up just after 5. Get your questions in. 650-650 is our text inbox. And if you get adventurous enough and want to grab a phone line, maybe we can even get you on the phone to ask a question if you can't text while you're driving. 604-280-0650. And we will dissect some of the things Jim Benning told us, Walks. Because a lot there. I mean, Jim's gotten pretty good at not telling us about injuries. But obviously, there's always some discussion around Jim Benning and his comments about the tenure here in Vancouver. We can dig into all that stuff.
Also, when we come back, maybe a quick debate. I know this was raised everywhere today and certainly raised on Reach Deep. Playoff overtime, 5 overtimes yesterday. It was the middle of the day, so for us anyway, so we really didn't notice too much. But playoff overtime is have the potential to be a little too long. We'll weigh into that and the Canucks playoff mailbag when we come back. Sportsnet 650. 5 o'clock hour, 30 minutes to go on the program. Andrew Walker, Satyar Shah, your home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650. And then your official pregame show gets going at 5:30 for Land Rover and Image.ca. We're going to be joined by Ed Jovanovski. We're going to be joined by Yannick Hansen for the first official Canucks game day, excuse me, in 5 years as they take on the St. Louis Blues round one, game one tonight. 7:30 is your puck drop. Why don't we get you updated on the out-of-town scoreboard? Is the Sportsnet 650 goal horn brought to you by BC Diesel, your source for diesel repair and performance. It's a lot of Colorado.
Yes.
It was scoreless in the third period. I mean, give Arizona a little bit of credit. They were holding him off the board, but it's been all abs. The shots are 38-13. They've piled on, Sat, with 3 quick goals in about a minute and a half.
Yeah, and they started things off with 2 shorties. Actually, 3 shorthanded goals, right? I mean, so Nazem Kadri, JT Compher, and Mikko Rantanen have all scored.
Not shorthanded.
Not all. It says shorthanded on the thing on ESPN's. I'm looking
up.
They're
yeah,
not actually
not,
all shorthanded.
Yeah,
but yeah,
no.
3 goals in the third period. Nazem Kadri, JT Compher, and Mikko Rantanen.
Kadri on the power play, and then Compher and Rantanen came at even strength. Colorado is a handful. There's no doubt about that. Philly and Montreal, they're set to go for game one, and we're about 2.5 hours away from the drop of the puck between the Canucks and the St. Louis Blues. For the next half an hour, so over the last 5 months, we've been doing the daily isolation mailbag. It's been a lot of fun. It's been one of our favorite things. And the listeners have texted in and tweeted in all kinds of questions, some sports, some non-sports, some utterly ridiculous that we debated over the last 5 months. Today, it's all getting focused in on the Canucks playoff mailbag. So get your questions in or your take, 650-650. As we get you set for the pregame show, that's the text line. The phone number is 604-280-0650. If you have a Canucks take or question heading into round one, game one against the St. Louis Blues, or find us on Twitter as well, at Andrew Walker 650, at Bick650, and at Satyar Shah. Bick Nazar is our producer, and the text line is buzzing right now with all the questions. So, yeah, let's get to the Canucks playoff mailbag. Bick and debate some of these. Oh no, I didn't need this. I didn't need that.
You needed this.
You've got questions. Send us your letters.
I forgot. I forgot.
Absolutely pivotal. To
I forgot
have.
That.
Oh, so
exists.
Good. I love it.
It's wild. You said 5 months, and I was like, it hasn't been 5 months, and it's literally been 5 months of the day. It's
March 12th, I believe, was D-Day. So yeah. March, April, May, June, July, August. Yeah.
You're on top of everything.
Crazy.
Stunning to think how far we've come. And here we are for game one. Okay. Text inbox, 650-650. Jordan from Saskatoon. Who do they, the Canucks, pair up on that third D pair? They have to play some minutes, but they all have to be effective minutes. Who do they suit up against this Blues team?
Well, I think, Sat, as much as, hey, Olli Levy took a positive step, I think, over the last couple weeks, and the last couple months, really. I mean, Olli Levy, and we just heard from Jim Benning, he's going to find himself in the mix come training camp. That's great. But he played 6 minutes last game. Oscar Fantenberg was playing like 12 or 13. So if Fantenberg's good to go, I would say he's back in. And I do wonder, when Jordy Benn is ready to go, is he a guy that slots in ahead of Fantenberg?
And don't forget, Jordy Benn has playoff experience and has acquitted himself very well in the playoffs. And one of the things the Canucks talked about when they acquired him was he could come through in the postseason. That's when his game kind of shines. So I wouldn't be surprised either that Fantenberg's good to go, he goes back in, and that Jordy Benn moves up the depth chart.
Yeah, I just don't be surprised if there's no Olli Levy. That would surprise me tonight.
Steven, 650-650, what line do you want Pettersson to play against?
Well, ideally, I'd love his chances against anyone not named Ryan O'Reilly. St. Louis kind of the last change tonight. Or, Sat, I mean, this is a good question, because Maybe as good as Ryan O'Reilly is, maybe you say, hey, I'll take Pettersson against either of the top two centers. Maybe what you don't want is up against a Barbashev, Sundqvist type of checking line.
Yeah, that's the thing we want to avoid more than anything. But at the same time, this series, it's gonna, as much as we sit here and talk about, you know, all these different matchups and whatever, this is a top six matchup through and through. More than anything, that's kind of where you're at in this series. It's our top six against yours, and based on how the Blues play, it will come down to the top guys.
We have a live mailbag question on the phone line, 604-280-0650. Alex in Nanaimo. What's up, Alex? What's on your mind?
If you guys had a choice, if Gaudette, Telfy, McEwen, Jake, everyone's up, who comes out of the lineup and who do you guys stay? Because Sutter played very well in his replacement extra minutes that he had. Thanks.
Thanks for the call, Alex. Jake, if we had to pick one, Jake, Gaudette, or McEwen, all things being equal?
I'll go with McEwen.
Yeah, I'm kind of with you.
Just based on how he played, I think McEwen has a lot more to give too, and he's looked really good in his limited ice time and how he is progressing, his skating, his physicality. I would lean towards McEwen, but I'd have Gaudette second.
Yeah, and then, again, you got to see how the series goes, right? I mean, are the Canucks, are they going to be a 3-2 team in this series, or are they going to be chasing offense later on?
Right.
Again, like, guys like Gaudette and Jake Virtanen, they're never going to carry you offensively. Offensively for the Canucks, and it's not like they're led by two guys, but Quinn Hughes and Elias Pettersson and Besser and Horvat and JT Miller, and throw Tanner Pearson in there. Like, if those guys aren't scoring, you're doomed anyway.
Yeah, they will need, like, Canucks are going to need a bit more contribution from their bottom six goal-wise. They didn't get a ton against the Minnesota Wild, but it's going to, like, again, it is about your big guys.
They got one from Sutter, they got one from Roussel. Yeah, that was it.
And Tanev got one, but again, that's a defenseman from the point. But yeah, can they get a bit more from their bottom six?
Zane from Surrey, 650-650 text line. How do you think the Canucks match up physically against the Blues?
Man for man on paper, it doesn't feel great, but that was kind of the feeling against Minnesota, wasn't it? And then as much as we all hated game one because it was the bad result, I was most impressed in game one the way the Canucks came out and just didn't back down from anybody physically.
Yeah, I mean, the physical battle in this one, honestly, I think the Blues are going to look at this and they'll be the team that's a bit more surprised at how physical this series is. Like, the Blues are a physical team.
Yes.
They are expecting that the Canucks have something coming, whereas the Canucks have already played at that physical level already. Like, I don't think the Canucks, even if the Blues are the more physical squad today, I don't think the Canucks are going to be surprised by how hard the Blues play.
So, who are the physical monsters on St. Louis? Okay, so you have Parayko, Ryan O'Reilly obviously plays a physical game. Sundqvist plays a really heavy game. Tarasenko doesn't. Shen doesn't. Schwartz doesn't. Robert Thomas doesn't.
They're not a team that really fights, right? I mean, they're not a team that lays out a lot of huge hits. They just grind. Like, Ryan O'Reilly's not, like, he's physical, but he's not a guy that just lays guys out all the time. Like, he battles for position. He goes and gets pucks out. He's really good on the forecheck. He's hard to play against because he's always shadowing you defensively. He's just a really, really hard player to get through. That's his advantage. But Braden Shen might be one of their forwards that has a bit more edge than the other guys, right? Like, they don't have, like, without Patrick Maroon, they don't quite have that next level guy. Like, Sundqvist brings it. Now, how available is he? What level can he play at? These are all the kind of the factors you look at. But defensively, it's more about Parayko and Pietrangelo, that if they get you behind the net, good luck winning those puck battles.
Right. I mean, like, most teams' bottom sixes will work, right? Like, Sammy Blais and...
Yeah,
Zach Sanford. David Perron has some edge, actually.
Yeah, David Perron plays like he's feisty. Like Tony Roberts on Twitter says that David Perron might be St. Louis's secret weapon. I mean, the last couple of years, David Perron's had his best seasons point wise.
Scandella will play physical. Gunnarsson's a big boy.
Yeah, Alex Steen isn't going to run you over, but he's still a guy that grinds. More than anything, they're not a team that's going to go out there and just pound you. They just work really hard.
In that same vein, Brett from Richmond, which Blue do you think the Canucks fans will hate the most through this series? So I guess this series, Ryan Hartman.
Yeah, Hartman was kind of public enemy number one, right?
Mm-hmm.
I would say it has to be Perron.
Yeah.
If Perron is playing his game, he's the guy that you'll hate, right? Or maybe Binnington. Right, if St. Louis gets up early or Binnington has a good game, he is a guy that will be blunt to the media. Right, Jordan Binnington might end up being public enemy number one, but in terms of like on ice,
yeah,
it's got to be Perron.
Perron, I'll go with Sammy Blais because that guy plays physical, man, and he skates hard. He's gonna hit guys. If there's a guy who's gonna stir it up in their bottom six, it's probably him.
Sammy Blais is very Tyler Motz.
Yes,
yeah.
Give me Ryan O'Reilly. I do like the Perron one, but it's just going to be so frustrating at some point. You're like, Pettersson's got a chance. Oh, right. Ryan O'Reilly's there.
Yeah. But Ryan O'Reilly takes like three penalties a year, right? So it's not like he's going to be spearing guys.
It's tough. James in Qualicum Beach. Players will get injured. Which player injury would be the most devastating to our chances?
The devastating injury to the Canucks? I mean,
this is a dark question, James.
That's a really dark question. But
the answer is Quinn. The
answer is Quinn, because as good as Markstrom is, and listen, Demko's not at the same level, but he has shown that perhaps he can bottle something, right?
Well, if you lose Markstrom, yes, that sucks.
In theory,
but you don't lose your goaltending. You have a goalie that goes in. If you lose Quinn Hughes, you do not have someone.
No, you have nobody. Now,
that
if you
plays that position.
If you lose Pettersson, you're also screwed, but you can move JT Miller down the middle, for instance, have Bo and JT as
right.
two centers.
Adam Gaudette comes back
hey,
in.
Hey, it's not nearly as good. Not ideal. But you literally have nobody who can step in and play 20 minutes on your blue line.
No, I totally think, yes. Quinn Hughes is out. It means Ole Levy's in and playing more offensive. It's just, you can't replace Quinn Hughes, which is amazing. Man, he's a rookie defenseman in his first ever playoffs.
Gurdeep, 650. Is Binnington really that good?
He was last year in the playoffs. And last year during the regular season,
he's had an amazing run of a year and a half. And that's great. You can't take that away from him. There's a really good text here I read earlier. Joey in Richmond. All right. Yeah. Okay. So I'll let Joey in Richmond answer this. Binnington is a legend, says Joey, and won me literally thousands of dollars last year. But in scientific study, the results of a study only matter if you can replicate them. This summer is Binnington seeing if he can replicate. The proof's in the pudding. And his just finished chilling in the fridge. Let's go. Joey in Richmond.
That's well done.
I'm not convinced that Jordan Binnington is he's an NHL goaltender, much like Yaroslav Halak is an NHL goaltender that had an unbelievable playoff run. Right, Jose Theodore was a good number one starter and won a Hart Trophy over Jerome Iginla. But like Jose Theodore never scared anybody in his career.
No, I mean, he didn't. And honestly, man, like, you look at the body of work for Jordan Binnington so far, like, on the whole, if you look at his numbers through 2 years in the regular season, he's played like an above-average goalie. Hey, that's great. But can he find that elite level he showed through last season? He hasn't shown it yet this season.
Dan and Brentwood. Dan and Brentwood, really quickly, just going back to the public enemy number one, Dark Horse. Dan says, Robert Bortuzzo, big physical D-man. I don't know if Bortuzzo will get into all these games, but he lost his mind and cross-checked Arvidsson, suspended 4 games, remember that? So look out if somebody crashes Binnington's crease. Yeah, he could be the guy that plays a little dirty.
Let me give you a spectrum on Binnington, and you guys can kind of play some.
Okay.
On the spectrum of, like, Jonathan Quick, who had a high peak, and it was fairly long, obviously multiple cups.
Yeah.
And then the other end of the spectrum, like Matt Murray, really short peak, but won multiple cups, obviously, but now it's like Tristan Jarry. Where would Jordan Binnington fall on that spectrum to you guys?
So, I mean, I'd say that he kind of falls into the Matt Murray mold more than he falls into the next level, right?
Yeah, Matt Murray's a good comparable, although Matt Murray
has really fallen off, though. Like, one thing we haven't seen Binnington fall apart the way Matt Murray fell apart this year through a lot of
right, but we stretches. Can only say that after the fact, right?
No, it's true. But
at some point, Matt Murray's like, "Oh, he'll figure it out."
Yeah, listen, the Pittsburgh Penguins gave up Marc-Andre Fleury in the expansion draft, and nobody questioned it because Matt Murray was the truth, right? I was more convinced of Matt Murray than I am currently convinced of Jordan Binnington. Jordan Binnington's going to play in the league until he retires. Like he's never going back down to the American League or anything like that. But, like, goalies come and go in terms of elite runs. And Jordan Binnington, I think, plays on the perfect team. He was in the perfect situation. Confidence is a big thing.
Well, here's the thing. Even if he is like Cam Ward, and who had a respectable career, for instance, but the only time he won in the playoffs was when they won the Stanley Cup.
And one other year they went really deep. But
no, all I'm saying, when I look at Cam Ward, he played his best hockey that 1 year in the playoffs, right, and was never at that same level again. It's not to say that he had a bad career. The question is, can Binnington replicate? Like Joey in Richmond said, he texted in. Can he replicate what he did? Because a lot of goalies cannot.
Well, we know. Okay, so goalies that have come out and been like Conn Smythe contenders and won a Stanley Cup as a rookie. We're looking at Cam Ward and Patrick Waugh, and like, but is he going to be Patrick Waugh? He's probably right. More going to be like Cam Ward if he's lucky. And I love Cam Ward, but yeah.
Yeah, and Tony on Twitter says, what about a guy like Corey Crawford? Does he remind you of him perhaps? I think that's not a bad comp. Like Crawford, if you have a good enough team in front of him, you can win. But is he going to steal you a cup the way Ben? Well, Bennington didn't steal them the cup either. He played really well, but the whole team kind of rose to the challenge.
Full credit to what Binnington did, but it's a new year. It's a new playoff series. You're only as good as your last game, in a sense.
As we talk about players rising as they go along.
I was going to say, which is not good for Jacob Markstrom, his last game, but I digress.
So, talking about rising as you go along, Richmond Tony, which Canucks can actually be better in round one, even though they were all pretty good in the play-in round?
Which Canucks do you feel have like more to give? Markstrom can be better.
Yeah, Markstrom can be better. I still think that Bo and Pearson can be better. They had some really good moments, but I think that line can be better. You know, as good as Brock was, I still think Brock can be better. Here's the thing, man. No matter how well the Canucks played, and they played well as a team, I don't think a single player played at his absolute peak outside of maybe Brandon Sutter. And I'm not even dissing Brandon. Like, that was the best Brandon Sutter we've seen all season against the Minnesota Wild.
Yeah.
We saw flashes of some guys showing their form, like Pettersson, game one and two, spectacular. Quinn Hughes, game four, was an absolute magician on the ice. Markstrom had the shutout. But I still think that consistently, all those guys we mentioned haven't shown their best for back-to-back three games in a row, and I think that's a positive.
Yeah, that's fair. I'd put Besser in that category. I think Besser, in terms of how he played, was right at the peak. And honestly, like, the bottom six, right? Like, Louis Erickson, you sign up for that again. Tyler Motte, you're signing up for that. Jay Beagle, you're signing up for that. Brandon Sutter, you're signing up for that. If anything, I think the top six, or the bottom six, are the guys that that played at their peak. And,
yeah,
listen, I don't count on them. I don't think that you know, it's like, oh, we really need this guy to get going. But we do know what Jake Virtanen can do when he's going. Mm-hmm. And he had very... I know people freaked out about the back check, but he had very limited impact in the play-in series.
So he can also give more, right? He can do a lot more. Nobody was a passenger, especially in that game four. Even Jake, like we talked about him, he's been criticized. He dropped the gloves right off the bat, right? Like, he got involved. Sure. Like, he is trying to bring something, and that is encouraging. But yeah, as well as the team played as a whole, all of them can be a lot better still.
Jake from Port Moody, friend of the show, just wants to say, Jordan Binnington appears to be very arrogant and cocky. I think he uses that as a guise to mask his deficiencies. Canucks will get in his kitchen, and he will crumble. So that's a comment into the mailbag. Continuing the questions, Leaf, who might have a surprising amount of goals in this series? He is thinking Bo Horvat.
I can see that. I can see Bo doing that.
Surprising amount of goals in this series. Yeah, Bo Horvat.
See, now that doesn't mean a lot. It just means a surprising amount.
Okay,
so if Louis Erickson scored one goal, I'd be like, oh my God.
Yeah.
What a surprise.
You took it from me because I'm like, Louis might score two goals in this series.
So
he's playing in the top six, man. And I'm not even being facetious. He's playing in the top six, and he has helped him out defensively. If he's on the ice a lot with those guys, he might pot a couple.
And Louis, I want to say, should have had.
He had a breakaway.
He should have had one, and then the breakaway, I mean, that could easily be a goal, but he could have had, you know, two goals in that series. I'm going to say...
Well, the one where his stick breaks.
Right.
Yeah. I'm going to say from the back end, yeah, that's the one he should have had. From the back end, I'm going to say, because we all focused on Tyler Myers, well, the good was the physical play, the bad was the minor penalties, but he actually had a lot of shots that got through from the point. I'm going to say that Tyler Myers scores a couple of goals in this series.
Yeah, I can see that too. Yeah. James in Qualicum Beach says, Sat, you're undercrediting Besser. No, Besser was great, but we haven't seen Besser wire it yet. Like, we haven't seen Besser's best in space and him creating. He's battled. He's won battles in front of the net. He's dug pucks out. He's been good defensively. I love everything Brock Besser has done, but I still think we can see even more from Brock. And that's not even a criticism. It's a compliment to what these guys can still accomplish.
You hear that, Brock? We were complimented. Andrew Walker, Satyar Shah, and Bick Nizar. If you don't know, now you know. That is the Canucks playoff mailbag. We will continue to get into this and analyze this series as the pregame show begins coming up. Just a reminder, the lotto line is back together. They're going to be a huge key in this series. And you can score with the lotto line and win in our latest contest. Enter now at sportsnet.ca/650. Go to the website and go before this game begins. For every goal that Besser, Pettersson, and Miller score in this series, we will pull a winner from all of our online entries. So the more goals, the more winners we get. And this is your chance. We'll give away one prize pack for every goal that one of those three score in the series. Brought to you by Lotto 649. They include, it's a $100 value prize pack, tickets for an upcoming Lotto 649 draw, and Lotto 649 swag, and the winners will be get announced on air during this Canucks radio broadcast. So your chance to score and win with the Lotto line.
So you might see the Lotto line score, and they might help you hit the jackpot as well.
Sounds good. When we come back, it is the official Land Rover pregame show brought to you by Image.ca. It's finally here. We will get you set for Canucks and Blues. Game number one, first official playoff game in 5 years. Jovo and Hansen are standing by. We'll be back. Sportsnet 650.